to acknowledge Emily Sneller, the co-author, and this is a graduate student working with me that finished up this summer, and this is a portion of her master's thesis. So to get into this a little bit, buffer capacity is a term that we use in Wisconsin and a few other states that is a little bit different than how some people think of buffer capacity. And how we think of it is in terms of the amount of phosphorus required to increase soil test 1 part per million. So it's the kilograms per hectare of P per part per million soil test. And on our soil test, it's a Bray 1 soil test. Now, for the P buffer capacity, how we use it in Wisconsin, there's two uses. The first use that's been used for a long time is in our fertilizer recommendations. If your soil tests very low or low in phosphorus, we have a build and maintain recommendation system. So we want to build up to a soil test level, and we use the buffer capacity to help figure out how much additional fertilizer P is required to build the soil test. The second place where it's been used, and this is the more recent use of it, is within our P index and nutrient management planning software. So from the nutrient management planning standpoint, if we apply a rate of manure that contains phosphorus, we take off or subtract the crop removal P, and we maybe have a difference of P there. And the difference in P between added versus removed is multiplied by the buffer capacity to get an estimate of how much soil test P is going to change with that addition of manure. Now, there's another component to this as well, is that within the P index itself, soil test P is used to predict water extractable P. And that data there, there's a small data set that shows that we need to have two equations, one for coarse textured soils and one for medium fine textured soils to convert from soil test P to water extractable P. So the buffer capacity kind of hinges on a few different things here for us now in Wisconsin. The assumptions that we use for buffer capacity have been around for a while now. On coarse textured soils, it's 5.9, and medium and fine textures, it's 8.9 kilos per hectare per part per million. Now, the database behind those two numbers, I think, is a little questionable, and I think most of the data probably did not come out of Wisconsin itself. It was pulled out of other states in the Midwest. And we assume that all P sources have the same buffer capacity. So it doesn't matter if it's fertilizer or manure, it's going to do the same thing to soil test. But if we look at some of the past research that's been done, we know that there's been documentation that manure phosphorus can increase soil test P more than, less than, or equal to fertilizer. So that says that maybe this idea of a uniform P buffer capacity between fertilizers and manures is not valid. And you know, that could have some impacts on our P indexing if getting our risk assessment if we have some poor assumptions in there. So our objectives were to determine the effective P source and soil type on the phosphorus buffer capacity and determine the relationship between soil test P and water extractable P and see if it varies with P source and soil type. So getting into our methods and materials, we had two soils in this study. She also had a large field study, so that's why we only had two soils. We had a Withy silt loam in central Wisconsin and a Plano in southern Wisconsin. Both those soil test P levels are considered optimum in our system. However, if you are familiar with most of the soils that are tested in Wisconsin, they're kind of low for most samples that are received at the lab. The manures that we used, there were six of them. We had two dairy semi-solid manures, two dairy slurries, a swine slurry, and the poultry here is actually pelletized poultry litter. You know, when it goes through this extrusion and partial composting process, so it looks like, you know, rabbit feed. So we used those manures, and here we've got the total P concentrations, obviously varying with the manure type, and then the dry matter, and then we did manure water extractable P at three different ratios, 1 to 100, 1 to 200, and 1 to 1,000, just to kind of see how that varied. I do have to note here that how we handled these manures is after they were collected, they were frozen, so that we can, because they were collected in the springtime when the field study was initiated, and then it was later on that we had the lab component. The solid manures were dried and ground so that we could make it much easier to work with in the incubation. However, the slurries were kept as slurries, and we added the manure to the soil as a liquid. We didn't attempt to dry it down, and we didn't dilute it when we added it either. So our experimental design in this incubation, I have rates of P here. There's actually a zero in there as well for our control. That included all those manure sources, plus we had a fertilizer in there, so we had triple superphosphate. After the soils were mixed with the manures, they're packed to a bulk density, watered so that they're up at 60% water-filled pore space. The incubation was 15 weeks at 25 degrees C. We had a completely randomized design with three replications, and at the end of the incubation period, we measured both bray and water extractable P on these. So moving into our results, for P buffer capacity, now how this was calculated, to point out, is it's the P rate applied divided by the change in soil test P, and the change in soil test P was calculated as the treated sample soil test P minus the incubated control. So we were factoring out the P mineralization that was occurring just naturally from the soil. Now when we ran the statistics, there was no interaction between P source and rate of P applied. So that we can then kind of look at the individual effects of those. We then found that the rate of P applied, there was no effect on the P buffer capacity. So what you're seeing here then is the summation of looking at the P buffer capacity by P source, and that summed over all of the P rates. So when we're looking at these numbers here, we've got the Plano soil on the top here in blue and the Withy in the yellow on the bottom. And one of the first things that you notice is that the Plano soil, the buffer capacities tend to be less than the Withy. So that's that one big obvious thing. Another thing is we look at them, there's distinct trends. We can see that the dairy sources tend to have the higher buffer capacities, and then swine coming in right below them, and fertilizer and poultry are more similar to each other. That trend holds true as well down at the Withy, even though the overall buffer capacities are greater. Now we want to compare this to, you know, our 8.9 buffer capacity that we're using. Each individual here, that is this number, say 10.71, was compared to 8.9. And for this whole table, none of those numbers is, they're all significantly different than 8.9, with the exception of the swine slurry here on the Withy soil. So that had the same buffer capacity as what we use. All the other buffer capacities were different. And when we look at it, on the Plano soil, doesn't matter what P source we put on, the buffer capacity was less than what we assume. So it says that we need to apply less phosphorus to increase soil test P, one part per million, compared to what we think we need to do. On the Withy, there's some differences. The fertilizer and poultry, we have lower buffer capacities than our assumed numbers, but when we look at our dairy slurries and dairy semi-solids, we have greater buffer capacities. So that means compared to what we currently assume, we probably could apply more dairy manure and before we increase the soil test one part per million. So in a big dairy state like Wisconsin, that can make a big difference on some of our assumptions in our P index if we can actually be applying more. So if we look at the relationship then to of soil test P to water extractable P, you know, our estimates good there in our P indexing process. At the top here, let's focus on, this is the regression equation, so we have the slope, intercept, and the R squared, and this top line here is for all sources and soils combined together. So we have a pretty decent R squared, it could be better, it's highly significant, but the N value is very large in here, so it's making a lot of things significant. So we decided to kind of separate it out by soil series, and we grouped all sources together. On the Plano soil and on the Withy, we had a reduction in R squared, so that wasn't a good step. But we decided we'd further tease it a little bit, and we separated out on each soil by P source. And overall, we had big improvements in the R squared. But we started seeing some interesting differences. If we focus on the column in the center on the slopes, the letters behind the slope on a given soil says that this dairy semi-solid with an A is significantly different than the dairy slurry 2. Okay? So it's comparing sources within a soil. So we have some trends if we look between the two soils. In general, dairy semi-solids have a greater slope than fertilizer, which is about the same as poultry manure. They're greater than the dairy slurries, which is about the same as the swine slurries. So it looks like there can be some grouping of manures as far as how they interact with affecting that relationship between water extractable P and soil test P. What we should also look at, too, is between the two soils, if we just look at the magnitude of the slopes themselves, they are significantly different. The withy slopes are significantly less than the plano slopes. So there's distinct differences between soil types and how tightly they're holding the P that's bound either from manure or fertilizer and releasing that to water versus the bray extractant. So there can, this is suggesting that there's some more nuances going on with manure than what we are currently assuming are happening out there. So in conclusion, we have P buffer capacity trends. We tend to see that dairy sources are greater than swine slurry, and which is greater than poultry and is about the same as fertilizer. So this is in general saying that if you're ignoring the fact of soil differences, you can apply more manure to increase soil test than you can fertilizer. Or it takes more manure to increase soil test compared to fertilizer. We also found that the P buffer capacity is generally different than the 8.9 that we assume it to be, and that it is P source and soil series dependent, so it's a little more complicated than what we would have liked to have seen. The relationships between soil test P and water extractable P are definitely soil series and P source dependent, although it does look like we can be grouping some P sources together and get similar numbers or equations. So some of the practical implications and where this is going. Well, our current assumptions about P buffer capacity and the relationships between soil test P and water extractable P may not be the best. They're the best with what data we've got at this point, but I think this suggests that we need to look in this a little bit harder because there's a lot of things that are hinging on our P index. That's embedded right now into our nutrient management regulations in the state. So we need to be as good as possible on this type of information. However, there are some distinct limitations to this research. This is only two soils. We only had silt loams. We didn't have any of our silty clays. We didn't have any sandy soils in here. And we did only have seven P sources. There's a whole host of different manures out there and manure handling systems that potentially impact some of this. So we really need to do a little bit more work with this to figure out whether what we're seeing with these two soils happens to be on the edges of the bell-shaped curve for the normal population, or if we've got two different populations going on or more out there in this information. So with that, I'll take any questions if there's time.
Would you have time for a question or two?
The question was, we're seeing drastic differences in soil types here with the two soils. They're different, but they're both silt loams. What else about them might tell us about that? Well, one thing that we do know with them is their location within the state. We have the Plano soil. That is on our prairie-derived soils in the southern part of the state. So the mineralogy may be slightly different than what we have in central Wisconsin, where those are, that's a very acid soil if it's not limed. And it's a silt loam, but it's over top of granite. And that soil has poor internal drainage as well, though that doesn't necessarily affect the incubation so much. But there are some differences in soils. That's why I think we need more soils to look at so that we can look at all these different soil properties and try to see what winnows out as being useful.
One more.
The question is, what do I think is the difference between manure P and the reason for manure P and fertilizer P differences? And I think it has to do with all the other stuff in manure, you know, real technical term stuff. But, you know, there's a presentation yesterday from Keith Goyne on dissolved organic matter and its impacts with poultry litter. I think there may be some issues there, and there's competition, particularly when we think about these slurries. They're sitting in a pit for how long, and you know the bacteria are just going. How much organic acids are being produced, and do those organic acids compete with P for binding sites? So there may be some dynamics going on there on the chemistry end that aren't sorted out in a simple study like this.
Okay, thank you, Karen.
Thank you.